I've said many times, if we're going to make this place work, as the American people expect us to make this place work, knowing that sometimes there'll be differences, sometimes politics will creep in. Politics is highly competitive, it should be, but it should be based on ideas and what may be best for the country. But for the Senate to operate, the leaders have to work together. And I look forward to working with Senator Daschle. We've known each other for a long time. We're from the same part of the country. I'm from Kansas, he's from South Dakota. We have many things in common. And our relationship has to be based on trust. There can't be any surprises. The majority leader has the advantage because he has priority of recognition. And I'll not permit any surprises. And Senator Daschle has indicated the same. I had such a relationship with Senator Mitchell and Senator Byrd. In fact, I talked to Senator Mitchell this morning about 10 after 11. I said, George, you've got 50 minutes left. Anything you want me to do? We were good friends. We worked well together. As I did with Senator Byrd, I learned a lot from Senator Byrd. I decided a long time ago never to argue about the rules with Senator Byrd because you'll lose. He wrote most of them. And he's defined others. And he's modified others. In fact, I asked him a question this morning. I said, Robert, it's not necessary when you send a resolution that has to ask for its immediate consideration, is it? He said, no. Just send a resolution to the desk. So I thought I knew that, but I wanted to make certain I understood it. So again, I went to Senator Byrd for advice. And I'm certain that Senator Daschle and I will continue that tradition. I also want to congratulate the 11 new Republican senators who were elected in November. And I thank them and all my Republican colleagues and for their support in electing me a Senate Majority Leader. But even more importantly, on behalf of all of us elected to serve, I thank the American people for their trust and their call to action. America has reconnected us with the hopes for a nation made more free by demanding a government that is more limited. Reigning in our government will be my mandate, and it will be the purpose and principal accomplishment of the 104th Congress. It was nearly 206 years ago when the first Congress met in New York City, and much of their work was devoted to writing the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to our Constitution. The 10th of those amendments reads, and I quote, "The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states, respectively, or to the people, And I might say that I think we need to focus on the 10th Amendment, so I intend to place it in the record at least once a week with a brief statement. So anybody who reads the record, anybody be watching C-SPAN, or my colleagues may understand the importance of the 10th Amendment and how far we've strayed from it. Federalism is an idea that power should be kept close to the people. It's the idea on which our nation was founded. But there are some in Washington, perhaps fewer this year than last, who believe that neither our states nor our people can be trusted with power. And federalism has given way to paternalism with its disastrous results. If I have one goal for the 104th Congress, it is this, that we will dust off the 10th Amendment and restore it to its rightful place in the Constitution. Senate Bill number one. That's step number one. Legislation to end unasked for and unfunded federal mandates on states and cities and communities across America. And I'm honored that the presiding officer at this moment is Senator Kemp Thorne from Idaho, former Mayor of Boise, Idaho, who's been leading the effort since day one, since his first day on the Senate floor, working with governors, our colleagues on both sides of the aisle, colleagues in the House, mayors, county commissioners all across America. Because we know what federal mandates, and he knows better than most, coming here as a mayor, what it's cost our cities, how it's bankrupt our cities and states. So along with many other senators, Senator Kemp Thorne has done yeoman's work in preparing this legislation. We're going to have hearings tomorrow. We're serious about this. We promised the American people, if you gave us the majority, we would do certain things, and we're about to do certain things that we think are right. Not necessarily partisan, but right. And we hope to bring it to the floor very soon. I think I spoke this morning with the Senator from Idaho, and he's prepared, I hope, early next week. We wish to demonstrate quickly, whatever the message may have been on November 8, 1994, and there were a lot of messages. But I think one message was, you know, take a look at the 10th Amendment. Maybe people didn't think about it when they voted. But give America back to the people. Give America back to the states, back to the local communities. What's wrong with that? We don't have all the answers in Washington, D.C. And why should we tell the state of Idaho or the state of Kansas or the state of South Dakota or Oregon or any other state that we're going to pass this federal law, we're going to require that you do certain things, but we're not going to send you any money. So you raise the taxes in the local communities or in the states. You tax the people. And when they complain about it, they say, well, we can't help it because the federal government passed this mandate. So we're going to continue our drive to return power to our states and our people throughout the 104th Congress. We will roll back federal programs, laws and regulations from A to Z, from Amtrak to zoological studies, working our way through the alphabet soup of government. What will be our guide? Well, our guide is going to be simply this. Is this program a basic function of a limited government, or is it another example of how government has lost faith in the judgments of our people and the potential of our markets? That's the test. That's the test. And I believe that more often than not, the answer to this question will justify less federal involvement, fewer federal rules and regulations, a reduction in federal spending, and more freedom and opportunity for our states and our citizens. Again, getting back to the 10th Amendment. Part of what has allowed government to become so cavalier with power has been its ability to exclude itself from the dictates we impose on the American people, we the Congress. So what are we going to do? Well, this is going to be Bill number 2. This will end with the passage of Senate Bill number 2. Effort led by Senators Grassley, a Republican, and Senator Lieberman, a Democrat. And we have a counterpart led by Republicans and Democrats in the House, particularly Senator or Congressman Shays from Connecticut. I can think of no better protection for the private citizens and private enterprise than the constant prospect for members of Congress that we will have to live under the rules we inflict on everyone else. So if a law is going to apply to some small businessman or woman in Idaho, Oregon, Kansas, North Carolina, wherever, it's also going to apply to Congress. And maybe when it applies to Congress, we'll understand why so many people write and complain to us about this law or that law or this law. And don't misunderstand me. Some laws we pass certainly are beneficial. And the government does a lot of good things. Don't misunderstand me. But why shouldn't we live under the same laws we require that you live under? So that's going to be Bill number 2. Number 2. In the same spirit, we're also going to propose and pass legislation to protect the rights of private property owners and to cut the tangle of red tape forced upon our small businessmen and women. Property rights, again initiated by a senator from Idaho, Senator Sims, who served here with distinction for years. It's his idea. And when Steve Sims left the Senate voluntarily, he passed it on to me. And I've worked with my colleagues, Senator Graham and others, on this side of the aisle. Again, the presiding officer, Senator Craig from Idaho, and a number of others. And we believe in it. It's important in urban and rural areas all across America. Incidentally, it was said by someone who should know better last year that America's small businessmen and women were getting a free ride from American society. And that statement wasn't made by a politician, so don't read anything into it, but somebody that should have known better. Well, let me set the record straight. The engine of American society is America's small business. Small business provides the jobs, the competition, and the spark for progress that is the very essence of democratic capitalism. It is small business that carries America, not the other way around. And Mr. President, Republicans also believe that our country's increasingly desperate fight against crime is an area where more freedom is needed at the state level. Today we will introduce, under Senator Hatch's leadership, Senate Bill 3, a crime bill that will free states and cities to decide for themselves how to spend much of the $8 billion in law enforcement funds appropriated last year. It will eliminate the wasteful social spending programs included in last year's so-called crime bill. And perhaps most importantly, the crime bill we introduce today will begin our effort to restore the freedom from fear we knew in the America of our youth. In my hometown of Russell, Kansas, when I was growing up, we didn't lock our doors at night. Nobody locked their doors at night. You left your keys in your car. And even in towns the size of mine, in this day and age, you don't do that anymore. So somehow that's been lost to the children growing up in America today. And we will, without apology, remove from society those who are tearing it apart with casual violence and a new chilling disregard for human life. Our crime bill will impose mandatory minimum sentences on those who use guns in the commission of a crime and make certain there are jails there to lock them up. And in the next session, we will cut taxes. Under Senator Packwood's leadership, the Finance Committee will produce as a top priority a tax cut that will let families keep more of their own money to invest in their own children and in their own future, instead of siphoning off, giving it to Washington, sending it back in some program that may or may not work. And there seems to be a growing bipartisan consensus that taxes must be cut, which Republicans welcome and which encourages me to believe the Senate can act quickly. The President's recent comments indicate he is ready to sign such a bill. But I strongly object to the President's insistence on labeling America by class. I don't think we ought to divide Americans into economic groups competing against one against the other for the favors of the government. Rather, we must lead by instilling hope and restoring freedom and opportunity for all of our people. No more of the class warfare. It doesn't work.